The deserts also supported a number of wild animals that were used for meat: jackals, lions, gazelles, onagers, hyenas. Many of these animals have been hunted into extinction, but we see them reported in the text as being served at feasts in Mesopotamia. The marshes in the low-lying areas supported an even greater variety of wildlife, including several species of birds, fish, and other water creatures. And again, texts record all of these different species being brought at lavish feasts. We'll discuss these in a later lecture. The marshlands also served as a refuge for political rebels or criminals, and this is another important aspect of this environment. An 8th century Babylonian king escaped twice to the region he called the Sea Land from his Assyrian overlord, and he managed to collect reinforcements from this area. The practice continued until the early 1990s, when Saddam Hussein ordered the marshes drained to force out the marsh Arabs who opposed his rule. It's estimated that only about 10 to 20% of the marshes remain today. A reclamation project to try and restore some of this environment has been begun, but it is unlikely to be completely successful. Just too much damage has been inflicted. As we look at the southern coastline, there is some debate about the location of the mouth of the Persian Gulf. It used to be assumed that the coastline was farther inland, basically right up to the borders of the southernmost cities that were discovered. But in the mid-20th century, this idea was challenged, and geologists accepted that the ancient coastline was about the same as it was today. The issue is not settled, however. As you look at maps, you may find different levels for the ancient coastline, so just keep in mind that this is an area for future research. We will see that large cities grew where there was easy access to natural resources. And in Mesopotamia, the plains near the rivers were the great cultural centers. Rivers not only provided water necessary for a food supply for a city, but also an easy means of transportation. So goods, people, ideas can travel up and down the rivers. If you keep this in mind, the way that the rivers were used in many different aspects of life, it will help to explain the cohesiveness that is so striking, that there are similar lifestyles, and that there's an easy communication between different parts of Mesopotamia. In contrast, the mountain ranges fostered much smaller, more isolated, even more independent groups. Cities appear somewhat later here. Large cities were not the norm until the end of the second millennium, early first millennium. And trade becomes a much more important, much more heavily documented aspect of society. In the north, they're much closer to key trade routes that connected east and west, especially the west to the Mediterranean. So as we look more closely at this area, we can begin to think about why people settled where they did. In southern Mesopotamia, there's not enough rainfall to supply agriculture. There's only an average of about 10 inches a year. So you need a pretty compelling reason to live there. And that compelling reason was the fertility of the soil, which can reach a 1 to 20 seed to harvest yield per year. The trade-off is that a community would have to expend a significant amount of labor to create an artificial water source draining from these rivers. And as population density in the area increased, neighboring cities began to compete for access to prime farmland, which would be the area right near the river. One of our earliest historical conflicts is the 150-year war, lasting from about 2500 to 2350 BC, between the southern cities of Umma and Lagash, and this war was prompted by conflicts over borders and farmlands.